What will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that?
No!
We will run! And we will live.
Die. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Hey, this is Marco. Welcome back. You know, as I'm laying around here in month whatever of these unusual times and restricted freedoms, you know, everybody complaining about masks or whatever, but I think the biggest thing that's bothering me is just the lack of being able to go and travel. And I started thinking about freedom and how important it is. And then that gave me, you know, this remembrance, this memory, this guy that I met. And he's the freest man I've ever known. And I have no idea what his name is. I just know him as that smiling dude down the beach in the blue tent. And I really admire him because, as you'll find out later, he saw an opportunity and he went for it. In 100% towards freedom and liberty and doing what he wanted to do. And it has everything to do with why he seemed to be so incredibly happy. You know, where I went, it's I like the end of the road. I like when you look on the map and there's ends of the road, I'm always intrigued about people that are the last person at the end of a road. Maybe as we get along on this, I'll talk about some other end of the road places or that I've been to, but this particular one takes a couple days to get there. Even if you have a car, it's not something that a place where you go and quickly get there. Even if you fly in, it still requires quite a bit of effort to get there. It's at the end of a 25 kilometer, just rutted out, nasty dirt road, often flooded. Potholes everywhere, not maintained at all, in the middle of the jungle. And so the way I do it, I get there and I get to town and go shopping and load up boxes, lots of boxes. And then, you know, for my luxury meals, usually tuna fish casserole, which consists of tuna fish, spaghetti, beans, rice, mayonnaise, more tuna and hot sauce. Pretty potent little meal. And then, you know, a wine or beer to go with that. Usually wine, because hot beer is not particularly tasty. So anyways, and I go and I hang in a hammock in a palapa. So I'm there and I'm all set up and I get down to the beach and I'm checking out the surf. And it's pretty good. It's a good day overhead. It's a great day to arrive. You know, there's some waves. It's looking actually really good. A few guys out. Locals are out there ripping. And there's a guy with just an incredibly white face. His whole face was slathered with zinc oxide. But also his teeth matched his face. He was smiling the whole time. And if you're a surfer, you know that it's kind of unnerving to have some guy out there just with this big shit-eating grin on his face. Most surfers are kind of in their own little world or, you know, trying to, I don't know, be cool, I guess, or just, I don't know, you just kind of go into a respectful silence with each other because there's a little pecking order out there. Well, not this guy. He was taken off on anything and everything, happily so. He would get totally pounded. His skill level was not what you want to have out in this particular waves that day. It was actually pretty powerful. He got potently pounded a few times. And, you know, I sat on the beach and watched him, and he was still just, he would come up so animated and paddle right back out, and the smile never left his face. It was weird. And he was so jovial and just bubbly, even from the shoreline. But so I went back, got my stuff together, you know, ambled down, waxed up my board, paddle out there. And, you know, I'm paddling out first time. And here's this guy. It's like, he's like a one man welcoming committee. Hey, man. And he's got an accent. Hey, man. Hey, welcome. Hey, how are you? You know, this, I forget exactly what he said, but, and then again, like a smile from deep, deep within. I can't think of someone. The Cheshire cat smile. And he's out there, and obviously he's friendly with people. He's a nice guy. Had our session, and when I was out in the water, he continued to take off. He got a couple good rides, got some rides. Everybody whooped for him. I whooped for him, and still the same smile. I mean, it looked like it was plastered on his face. Someone had drawn this smile on his face. Anyways, after the session, went back, had my meal, relaxed, set up my camp a little bit more. Wind came on shore a little bit. And I, you know, there's not much to do in the jungle except for look at monkeys and birds and avoid stepping on snakes and dart frogs and things. So, went back down. Took my snack down, sat on the beach, and looked up, and at the very end of the road, down there on the edge of the jungle, just where the beach met the trees, I could kind of see a little blue down there, and, you know, a busy guy around the campsite. And I realized it was the smiling guy. So I kind of ambled down there. You know, not to interrupt him or whatever, but if he met eyes with me, I wanted to find out about his situation. As a dedicated budget traveler, one of the brothers of cheapness, Los Hermanos Sin Dinero, I'm always intrigued by these kind of people that just have a tent and how their setup is. And I kind of try and go to see what kind of, you know, interesting things they do that I could learn from. So I go up there, and he's got a cleared area swept with a, you know, coconut frond. He's got his little fire pit all organized, nice and neat. He's got the cheapest blue tent you could possibly imagine, maybe $30. Little one-man, two-man tent, one of those cheapo blue tents. Sometimes they're orange, little pup tents. Definitely made in China. And then on top of that, he had a blue tarp. I'm going to post the picture I have of him on this podcast. So I hope that while I'm describing him, you'll take a chance to study the photo a little bit. And then outside of that, he had, you know, some Coke bottles that he filled with water for drinking. And he dug a moat around for the rain. So, you know, when it falls off the tarp, the rain comes off the tarp, because we were in the rainforest. When it comes off the tarp, it would be, you know, a little moat where the water would go in there instead of backing up into his tent, which I thought was a really good idea. I hadn't seen that before. So I go over and, hey, man, how you doing? And there he is. He breaks right straight into the big grin. And you know, we do the fist bump, shake hands, whatever. And I get sitting to talking to him. And, the other thing he has there is a motorcycle. I would call it an advanced moped. You know, those little 100cc, 90cc little kind of commuter mopeds. Actually, they're used by families in the third world. It's like the cheapest thing you can get besides riding the bus. You'll see whole families on those things with their shopping. I've seen furniture moved with a couple people on one of those things. Anyways, that's what he had for transportation, his little 100cc, let's call it like a Suzuki. And he had a surfboard rack, and he had his surfboard there. I'm like, man, that's a pretty cool setup, you know? I like this. And I got to talking to him, and I said, so, you know, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Israel. You know, we talked a little bit about Israelite because you don't meet too many Israeli surfers. I can't imagine the waves being so great over there. And, you know, he had kind of an egg shape, a beginner board, I would call it. A good all-around board, like maybe a 7.2 thruster. And I come to find out that he had come to Costa Rica on the typical tourist two-week vacation from Israel. He did all the stuff. He went up to the volcanoes. He swam in the hot pools. He went to, the reptile zoo and saw the reptiles and the animals that Costa Rica is famous for. He drank the coffee. He went on the coffee tour. He did the zip lining. He stared at the monkeys. He went on the guided ATV up to the waterfalls. You know, he took the surf lesson. Got to have the surf lesson. And he took another surf lesson. And he took another surf lesson. And then he bought a surfboard, the board that I was just telling you about. He bought a surfboard. And he called his office in Israel. And he quit his job. I forget what it was, but it was, you know, a job where you only get 2 weeks of vacation a year. It was maybe lawyer or something. You know, it was a corporate job. He called, quit, and became a surfer. Not just a surfer, but to me, like a soul surfer. He quit everything. He saw the opportunity that was there to be free and to have liberty and to live the life that he, you know, maybe he had dreamed about. But anyways, it was amazing. It's just amazing to me. And I said, so where did you get the motorcycle? And he said, well, you know, I noticed all the locals, that's what they use. So I bought it for $500 or something. It was cheap, really cheap. He bought it. He had it modified in San Jose, Costa Rica. He had it modified and welded this pretty cool little side thing for carrying his board, side rack. And then he went to Walmart, because there's a Walmart in San Jose right by the airport. He went to Walmart, bought the tent I told you about, bought, that was it, and a blue tarp. Oh, and a cheapo sleeping, like a sleeping mat. And so when I saw him, I said, so what do you, you know, I'm always curious what people eat. Like, you know, what are you eating? So I got rice and beans, you know, because it's the other thing, sleeping in a tent, you'd have to worry about animals getting in there, you know, if you had some kind of food. So he just had dried rice and dried beans, and that's what he was living on. And I'm telling you, he was just the happiest guy I've ever met. And I said, so what's the plan? He said, oh, I'm going to go north. I'm heading north from here. Okay, cool. Well, a couple days when the waves drop, I'm going to head north. I was like, oh, right on, man. Are you going up to Playa Hermosa or something? Yeah, I'm going up to Playa Hermosa. Cool. That's a great wave, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, and then what? Then Nicaragua? Yeah, I'm going to go to Nicaragua, but El Salvador, Mexico, and then I'm going up through California. And at this point, I'm looking at his motorcycle, and my eyes are kind of, the eyebrows are raising. And you're going through California? Yeah, man, I mean, there was no, like, doubt. Yep, I'm going to California. I'm going to head all the way up to Victoria, Canada, and that's my plan. Heading to Canada. And so just think about that. I've looked that up. It's like 8,000 kilometers. What's that? 5,000 miles. It says on Google Earth that it's 125 hours of driving, but I think it's way longer than that. What an amazing trip. I've looked at the map, and I know you guys have too. You look at the map and, you know, wonder about different places, and you see this coastline. Let's just imagine from Canada driving all the way down through and down to Costa Rica, Panama. It's just the most amazing surf trip on the planet. And I don't know how many people actually do it, but this guy was planning on a 100cc moped with his blue tent. And, you know, he was gone in a couple days, no doubt heading north, no doubt with a big smile on his face, cruising through the rainforest, going down that road heading north, that he yelled several times, whatever the Hebrew word is for Freedom!